You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 44, Acting His Hearts Out. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including new details about TNG on Blu-ray, the truth about Tribbles, a sequel to The Inner Light, Vulcan Tourism's Transporter app, Scott Bakula's thoughts on the cancellation of Enterprise, and some news about the next JJ movie. Then, in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt and Colin Higgins as we discuss the Voyager episode, Threshold. So, let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing fantastically. This week, I have been watching Major League Baseball, so expect baseball references to fly over left field. I don't know anything about baseball, but I've been watching baseball, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, maybe I should have had Mike on for this show, because, you know, Mike and Dan, they know all about sports.
They really do. Yeah, I just heard them talking the other day about the ground fly rule something. I don't know. I think it's hockey.
You didn't know what that was, right?
No.
You thought maybe it was like, you know, like a de-evolution or something like that, right?
Right.
The salamander, the ground salamander rule.
Well, isn't that, I mean, that's the Houston Salamanders, right? That's your team.
Yeah. Yeah, I like them. They're kind of slimy, but I like them.
Slimy, but I like them.
All right. So we'll foreshadow our feature today a little bit right there, which of course will be Threshold.
Right.
All right. So, well, Greg, before we jump into actually talking about news today, we did have one mailbag item that I wanted to throw out there. And it's basically just a comment this time. No questions about Picard's wardrobe or anything like that. This is just from Matt Rogan. And he just wanted to say, you guys have the best Trek podcast out there. Keep up the good work. And don't forget to do a barrel roll every now and then.
Do a barrel roll. The barrel roll.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I don't know if we're the best Trek podcast, but we're certainly the best dressed Trek podcast.
I think so. At least you are there today with your men in black getup.
Yes, well,
that you've got.
I'm going for the Bono look. I got some rose tinted Ray-Bans on, which I figured would help me see the best in Threshold.
All right. Good strategy.
We'll see how it works
going
out
on there. I thought you were going to pull out that little zapper there from Men in Black,
right.
And at the end, you were just going to zap us all so we could forget the episode.
Exactly. That's the one. I needed that one when we talked about These Are the Voyages.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, why don't we jump into news, Greg? What do we have up first in news this week?
Well, first we have a date that we've been waiting for, the street date of the TNG Blu-ray set for season one. Now, obviously, we've gotten the sampler disc, but that will soon be obsolete. Very obsolete, actually, as we'll discuss in a moment. So coming up on July 23rd, so just a couple months away at this point, maybe if I can do the math in my head, just 3 months away, correct? And we'll have all of season one in our hands in crystal clear HD vision with 7.1 surround sound crystalline entity.
Action. Exactly. So July 23rd, at least, is a UK release date.
Right.
That's what Amazon UK has been promoting. Have you seen a US release date yet? I don't think I've seen one officially
yet.
I
thought I did. I thought that had been officially announced, but perhaps all I've seen is the UK date. But I'm sure it's going to be somewhere around there, certainly.
Yeah. I suspect it'll be the same, probably, or the U.S. one might come just a little bit earlier, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it's sooner than everyone expected, I think. I think we were thinking autumn, possibly, towards the end of the year.
Yeah, and do we still know season two? Is that still 2013, or would we maybe get a holiday release with season two?
Well, that's a good question, because I was reading, where was I reading the other day? They were talking about something in season three, and they mentioned, I think this was on Trek Core, they were talking about the missing footage from Sins of the Father, mm-hmm. I think. And they mentioned season three and 2013 there. We would, you know, likely we would have to get season two, of course, either in 2013 or holiday release. And now that season one is coming in the summer, I think that there's probably a really good chance of a holiday release for season two.
I think that would be good. I hope they get these done sooner than later. I mean, even two seasons a year, even if they get two in 2012, that's still going to take a while for all the seasons to come out. So I hope they get working on releasing them as soon as possible. I'd love to see season two by the end of the year, especially because that means next year we can get those really solid episodes, you know, Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2, both in the same year. That would be exciting.
Yeah, that would be. I'm hoping they can accelerate the release pace, you know, as they do more and more of them, they get faster at working, and as the source material needs less work as the later seasons.
Yeah, I'm hoping they can just get faster and faster and just pump them out quicker and quicker and quicker, and eventually they can break through that season release threshold.
I hope so, yeah. And then we can watch all seasons in HD simultaneously.
Simultaneously, exactly.
Yes.
Just have to watch out for season seven when Picard ages and then turns into a salamander.
But I'm looking forward to being able to occupy every box set at the same time.
Certainly.
So hopefully that'll happen. There's a little news on price here. This is a store in the UK, Sainsbury's, who had promoted on their website an initial price of £60, which is roughly $81. Mm. So I'm thinking maybe in the US, maybe you'll see something like $79.99, perhaps.
Yeah, I'd expect for a box typically set to be able to get it for around 60, 50 or 60. We're definitely not going to see something like $20, but in that range. Yeah. And seeing that it's 50 pounds in the, or 50 or 60 pounds in the UK, it doesn't sound like it's going to be exorbitantly priced, which is quite good.
Yeah, I think in the States, maybe even 59, 64, 79 range, something like that. And yeah, if you go to somewhere like Costco or Sam's Club, places like that, maybe you'll be able to get it for maybe like 45, 50 bucks. That would be really nice if it came out. It's certainly an improvement over, remember when they released the original box sets of all the series and they were retailing for like 129?
Yeah, it was ridiculous what they were trying to do. And I don't know why, but I think, remind me, was that before the rights sort of shifted around? I feel like at this point, CBS is controlling the rights and is being smarter with their releases. And they did the deal with Netflix. I think they realized that they can't charge Trek fans hugely just because they're Trek fans.
Yeah, exactly. I don't remember at what point that happened. I know with the early ones, certainly with the original series, I think with the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, it was still under Paramount in the releases. And probably most of Voyager 2. I know with the fan collective sets, the first few fan collective sets on the packaging, it has Paramount.
Right.
And then it changed to have the CBS logo.
Well,
Like 2006, 7, 8 range somewhere is when it started.
So it's very possible that the pricing of the early TOS remastered was CBS finding their footing and just experimenting with price points. But I feel like since then, they've really pulled it back and have been a lot smarter about it. So I'd expect that here as well. That way.
So that'll be exciting to see. Now, Greg, did you see these images of the new crystalline entity?
I saw that Mike Okuda told me personally that they were going to do no computer-generated imagery in TNG HD. I believe I was told that very specifically. So I was very confused when I saw this, image.
Yeah, I kind of remember that too. I didn't remember if he had said for certain that there was going to be none, but certainly my understanding was that they were not going to be replacing elements with new CGI, but they were simply going to be remastering the what it was supposed to look like originally, right, if they could have shot it in HD.
Well, their new policy seems to be if it was done with computers onto video, that's okay to replace. But if there is a legitimate film element, they're going to preserve that. But the deal with the crystalline entity from Datalore, one of the most bizarre episodes ever, if you recall how that one ends. But it was done originally with computer-generated imagery, and so there was no film actually for them to preserve. It was just an old rusty videotape. So they threw that into the fire and just started new. And they basically created a new image that looks basically like the old one, just crisper.
CRISPR. I personally, I don't have any problem with this. I saw a few people on some discussion threads that said, you know, I'm really not a fan of replacing elements in old TV shows. And I totally get that. Overall, I think they're being very respectful of the next generation and what they're doing. And this crystalline entity just looks absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think they kind of had to do it because, like you said, there wasn't, it's not like the jellyfish in Encounter at Farpoint where they actually had kind of like a puppet, right, that they were raising. They kind of had to do this here. And I'm glad they did because this looks like, if you saw a crystalline entity in space made out of crystal, it's going to be vibrant like this. And so they had to do it. Yeah. So it's, I almost wish in this picture that we have here, if they could have maybe replaced the Lazy Boy recliners that they had on the bridge of the Enterprise with some chairs that looked like you might actually sit there and fly a ship. I'm always afraid they're going to fall asleep on the Enterprise-D.
So many changes that I would make if someone gave me access to the original source files.
Talk about total relaxation here.
So there's another image released as well of Lutan from Code of Honor. And goodness, all these images, they're just reminding me of how awful season one was, with Code of Honor being a shining example of, let's do a mock time, only let's make it not interesting or good at all.
Right, because it's not like, you know, like Spock had Punfar, you know, he hadn't gotten any action in a long time, right? But at this point, with Code of Honor, which episode is this? Had Yar already slept with Data at this point?
That was episode like 3, wasn't it? That was the Naked Now.
I think
now.
So.
So that was
the Naked Now.
Pretty early on.
So she did. I think so. Yeah. And then Code of Honor comes up. So I mean, it's not like she's, you know, in great need at this point, right?
It's like Roddenberry wanted to create this vision of the future where everyone was equal. So we had an incredibly sexist, racist episode right out of the bat. Let's just get this one out of the way immediately. Aliens, we don't really have money for makeup, do we? No, not really? Okay. Goodness. Anyway, but Code of Honor, it looks nice now. The colors are bright and you can see the detail on the uniforms. So
what I like in the picture here, and if you look closely in the background, is that MC Hammer who has been digitally added to the scene?
Well, MC Hammer is not doing much these days, so it makes perfect sense that he'd do some TNG reshoots.
I think so, because I'm thinking that they're going to actually put the original ending in here, which is where they all dance at the end.
The dance-off ending. Yes.
Yes.
That is, I mean,
instead of that, like a mace glove thing, they're going to have a dance-off. Yeah.
Well, when you're trying to figure out how to be like a Mock Time, but different, we talked about Blood Fever having this trouble. Just go with it, and then at the end, take a left turn at dance-off.
A dance-off, because no one's expecting, you don't see that coming, right?
No one expects a dance-off.
And then no one can say that you were remaking a previous episode.
Exactly.
In that case.
Because when have you seen a dance-off?
Right. And MC Hammer wasn't in a Mock Time.
Right. Speaking of things that were lost for years, like MC Hammer, it appears that they found those missing 13 seconds of HD footage, which thank goodness, because it stood out like a sore thumb in Sins of the Father.
Yeah. I saw this news and my very first thought was that the whole plan of having Zac Efron come in to stand in for Riker in that scene and, you know, and reshoot it in HD is, I guess, off the table now.
Yeah, that's disappointing, to say the least. I heard they were going to get Zac Efron to play the crystalline entity until someone realized they could make it in the computer.
Boy, he's getting a lot of Star Trek action, isn't he?
He really is.
Or potentially, but it all falls through in the end, right? Well, I am really glad that they found this footage anyway, because it would have looked quite odd to have the Sesti footage in the middle. But so let me ask you a question here, though. Do you think that the Blu-ray sampler set, the next level, can become a bit of a collector's item because it has the SD footage in there?
Goodness, I hope so. That would justify my purchase to some extent, if that's true. Because at the moment, it feels like the moment season one's released, my box set immediately becomes completely obsoleted. So we'll see.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe so. Well, anyway, I'm glad they found that. And I'm really excited about everything that's happening here with season one set. And they say that word is anyway that CBS is getting ready to start doing some pre-release promotion. So hopefully, at least there in the U.S., you may soon start seeing some TV commercials or other things, maybe in magazines, about the release.
This week on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Maybe they'll redo promos. They'll do them all.
That'd be great.
Just like the Voyager ones, yeah, where they have nothing to do with the actual story of the episode.
Right.
That'd be
Yar has to fight for her love using a sword. No, she doesn't. She actually...
Shirtless! No, wait, that's... that's Sulu in 5. The Naked Time.
7.1 shirtless action!
So would that be like the sound of the... I don't know. What would that be? The sound of the skin whooshing
something.
In the
I'm sure.
Air?
It's like Mike was talking about with the remastered motion picture. They'll find a sound effect for everything.
All right, they will. Okay, Greg, what else do we have up in news this week?
Well, we have quite a few stories about Tribbles. Well, maybe one story about Tribbles, but it just keeps reproducing.
The story that keeps on giving.
Right.
That's right. So this is about IDW Comics and what's going to be coming up in Star Trek Ongoing number 11 in July.
Right.
As we look ahead to the future, which again, may be around the same time that we get that season one Blu-ray set.
Right.
So Star Trek Ongoing, they're going to take on the Tribbles.
They're going to take on the Tribbles, but they're not going to remake The Trouble with Tribbles as they've been doing. This will be an all new storyline, but not one that's sort of connected to the movie, as we'll talk about in a week or two, which we'll get to that in a second. But this will be a Tribble episode called The Truth About Tribbles, which I'm assuming will reveal some deep, dark secret about the Tribbles' past.
Ooh, now that sounds exciting. Now, what do you think that secret might be?
Well, you know how the Romulans sort of keep it a secret that they've got the Remans working in these dark, damp caves and the dilithium mines? Why do you think Glommers hate Tribbles so much?
Hmm. Good question. So you're suggesting that the Glommers have been some sort of slave race to the Tribbles?
Exactly. And just, you know, imagine, I mean, this is what they do. They go down the mines, they sort of hover over a rock and they go boop. And then they sort of spit out some dilithium. It's cute. It's really cute. But if you think about it, it's disturbing.
So they are spitting dilithium. Now, yes. Would that be a special kind of dilithium that holds up at higher warp frequencies?
This would explain how Tribbles get around so fast. You know, it feels like Tribbles occupy every location on the Enterprise at once. It's actually warp 10.
Oh, Tribbles can go warp 10. So they were the first Tribbles to break the threshold.
Yes, Tribble pioneers.
All right. So I always thought that the Klingons designed Tribbles. I mean, the Klingons designed Glommers to eat Tribbles. But basically, maybe they designed them for some other purpose. And then the Glommers became slaves to the Tribbles. And then became angry.
Exactly.
And then began eating Tribbles.
Right. Right. You've got the timeline. I mean, this is wild speculation. For all I know, you know, the deep dark secret is that they're, you know, related to rabbits. I don't know. But I'm assuming
I honestly, I'm surprised that this isn't a glamour-focused story. You know, the glamour conspiracy. I can't be the only one waiting to know more about glamours. I cannot. It's impossible.
Well, I was waiting for a glamour's holiday personally, but yeah. But as you talk about, you know, the relationship as slaves to the Tribbles, then right. I think the glamour conspiracy or glamour's vengeance would have been a good way to go with this story.
Indeed.
But yeah, anyway, it is interesting that they're not remaking The Trouble with Tribbles, because we had the Galileo 7, we had Where No Man Has Gone Before, I guess first. Mm-hmm. Galileo 7, we've had Return of the Archons.
And, Operation Annihilate.
Operation Annihilate! Yes, we had that. Oh, sorry. Operation Annihilate.
Right.
We had that one. So, and then we got Vulcan's Vengeance. And now we have the truth about Tribbles. So I'm wondering if the signals that they're going to start doing more original material all the time now.
Well, we still,
instead of the reimaginings.
We have to get through Return of the Archons before we'll get to the Tribbles. So maybe they'll do one new story and then one remake and then one new and then one remake, which would be an interesting way to go about it.
That's right. We haven't had Archons yet, have we? So we're going to finish Vulcan's Vengeance, and then we're going to get Return of the Archons.
Yep.
And then the truth about Tribble. It's these release schedules. They're so far ahead, you know.
Yeah.
We should mention, in case anyone's wondering, you know, the reason that we have not yet talked about the current issue that's out, which is Vulcan's Vengeance Part 1, is that we are waiting for Vulcan's Vengeance Part 2.
Right.
So that we can then talk about the entire story. Yeah. At one time.
Yeah, it'd be a little silly to talk about it twice, and it would be difficult to sort of just talk about half of the story. And plus, we missed the week that we would have anyway. If you haven't read Vulcan's Vengeance, go ahead and read it. We will be discussing it in a week or two when the second issue is released.
Yeah, that'll be a couple of weeks from now, right, when it comes out. But it should be, do they come out on Wednesdays?
It's usually been the third or fourth Wednesday of the month, depending on whether or not it's delayed.
Okay, so it could be this week or next week, 18th or 25th. So yeah, it should be out soon. Yeah. All right. A few more tidbits here in terms of the IDW news for July. The volume 2 of Star Trek Ongoing is going to be coming out, which is 104 pages. So it's going to collect... what would that be, like four issues?
Yeah, I guess the way they're pitching it is it's just Operation Annihilate, but imagine it's going to have Operation Annihilate and the Vulcan's Vengeance storyline in it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, the news release just said Operation Annihilate, but that would not be 104 pages.
Yeah.
And they're selling it for $17.99, which would be like, don't buy them when they come out. Wait. Buy the collection and pay more.
Right, right.
So I don't think that's what they're doing. So it must have another story in there as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to be four issues. I don't know if it's going to be the one before. I'm trying to remember. We had Galileo 7 and Where No Man Has Gone Before, and that was collected in Volume 1.
Okay.
What was the third episode they did? Was that Galileo 7? So maybe this will be Galileo 7 and... No, I said that one.
Yeah, they did Operation Annihilate, and
so I guess it would be.
What are we on now?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, Annihilate 4, and
Annihilate and Vulcan's Vengeance. I guess.
Okay, that makes sense. And then Volume 3 will be Archons and Tribbles, and so on and so forth.
That would be 5, 6, 7, and 8. Yeah. So I think that's what they're doing. All right. So that's going to be out for $17.99. If you haven't read those two stories yet, you could get them in one collection there. And then also the continuing Next Generation Doctor Who series, number 3 is going to come out. That's Assimilation Part 2. And I like the cover anyway here. The cover has Kirk being very much like the Borg grabbing Picard in The Best of Both Worlds. Here we have the Cybermen from Doctor Who grabbing Kirk. It looks very similar.
But I'm a little confused why Kirk is in a next-gen Doctor Who crossover.
That's a very good question.
So,
who knows?
We haven't even seen the Doctor Who next-gen crossover part, the first issue, right? I believe that's coming out this month, unless I'm mistaken.
So.
I just neglected to buy it last month.
Yeah, either this month or maybe later, because this is going to be number three. If they do one per month, then that's going to be July. So it might not be until May.
Right. So we have quite a bit before we start understanding why the Cybermen would be assimilating Kirk.
Right. So we should do a special show of the Ready Room where we just purely speculate on the Doctor Who storyline.
I hope so.
We'll do that. Okay, so if you're looking for comics, that's what's coming up, and we'll keep you up to date on Trek.fm newsfeed if things are coming out, and you can also, of course, check IDW for news as well. Okay, while we're on the topic of comics, real quick, Greg, have you seen this thing that they're running over at TrekMovie.com called The Outer Light?
You know, I haven't. I've heard of it, and I'm a little confused about what exactly it is. So perhaps you can enlighten me and the viewers. I understand it's a sequel to The Inner Light, and it's being written by the same writer of The Inner Light. Now, is it officially sanctioned, or is this sort of a fan comic, sort of like we're talking about with Phase 2 and those things?
I don't think it's officially sanctioned. Honestly, they haven't really provided a lot of information about it, other than it's Morgan Gendel who wrote The Inner Light, and this is a sequel of sorts, and it's going to be released in 11 parts. And the first part is available on Trek Movie right now, and it's subtitled, the episode is called In Space, No One Can Hear You Play the Flute. However, so that makes it sound like it's a comedy, right? But I actually think it's not. The part that's up there right now that I read, it's basically Picard, I think, dealing with the aftermath of the Inner Light. You know, he retained those memories of his time there. And he's kind of longing to be back there, longing to be back on that world. And it's hard to tell right now how it's going to play out, you know, in all 11 parts. But it does seem to be a serious story dealing with the repercussions of that experience for Picard.
Very cool. It's a very cool concept, whether it's officially sanctioned or not. I almost want to just wait till it's all out so I can just read it all as one. And the fact that it's 11 parts, it's like, okay, well, I'll give it a wait. But as a concept, to do a sequel to The Inner Light and to get the original writer back to at least co-write it is very cool, very exciting. And I'd love to see other examples of this, you know, maybe shades of a different color, shades of purple, shades of mauve.
A lighter shade of gray. Yes. Well, to give you an example, one of the pages that's up there right now, it shows Picard in his ready room, and it says, "But no place seems colder and lonelier at the moment than the captain's quarters on the Starship Enterprise." And it shows Picard slumped over, and he's playing his flute. And he says, "Who am I, really? I am Picard, but I am also Kamin. As Kamin, I know the joys of fatherhood and marriage, which makes the loss of my other life even more devastating," as he has his, you know, hand, his face in his palm. So that's kind of where it's headed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I would rather read it all at once. And they're doing it in 11 parts, and they're releasing a new part every other week, which means it's going to take them 22 weeks to put the whole thing out, which I think is a little bit excessive.
And how many pages is part one? Is it something like 10 pages?
Well, they only have 4 pages up that I see right now.
So in the end, it's going to be a little considerably shorter, I guess, than the IDW. When it's two parts together, it's about 50, 60 pages for one of the IDW episodes. So it's going to be a little shorter than that in the end.
Two parts together would be, So maybe so, if I understand correctly, how it's playing out. But anyway, you go over to TrekMovie.com and you will see the story on there, and you can see what they're doing, and does look like a very interesting concept.
Yeah.
All right. One more interesting story for those who like tech. Craig, have you seen this plan for the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo, which is coming up April 27th to 29th here at the end of the month. There's a way that you can actually beam yourself around, apparently.
Well, that sounds fantastic because I keep thinking I can go, but then I look at the map and Calgary's really rather far. But if I could just beam to Calgary for this expo, I'd be there. Well, I'd be there in a moment.
You would. In fact, as quickly as you can press a button.
Exactly. But what is this? What is this really? Is it some sort of virtual reality? Is it a computer game? Is it a bus? What are we talking about here?
Well, it's a type of augmented reality. It's an app that was developed. We've talked about before the city of Vulcan mm-hmm. in Alberta in Canada, yeah. who has really positioned itself as Canada's Star Trek city, I guess you would mm-hmm. say, because of its name and its history. And
unfortunately, J.J. Abrams blew it up in 2009.
Just dropped a little bit of red matter yeah. right there. In Alberta. And we even had Catherine Pooley, who is the mm-hmm. tourism director for City of Vulcan on Matterstream before. Well, the City of Vulcan and Vulcan Tourism, they've developed this app for iPhone and iPad, which is a transporter app. And what's really cool here is they got together. This is actually officially done with CBS Outdoor. So this is an official thing that they have going there. And they got together and they have created this app that actually allows you, by using a specially designed bus shelter, mm-hmm. to beam yourself. So you stand in front. There's like a poster, on the side of the bus shelter that looks like the transporter room on the Enterprise D. And if you stand in front of this and you use the app, say on your iPad, and the app in conjunction with the bus shelter will allow you to actually take a photo and do a beaming action and actually disappear on the app. So you're not really truly beaming yourself. that's a little bit beyond our technology at the moment. And even if we could do that, I would have to just look at you, Greg, and I would have to say, up until now, it's all been just theory. I never thought I would really see it happen. I have to ask you, Greg, are we ready for it?
Right.
But it's still kind of cool. The fact that they can actually, you're still standing there, but in this photo, they can actually make you disappear with transporter effect.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's a cool thing. This expo sounds like it's going to be all kinds of fun. They're getting the entire TNG cast there. The entire cast, including Will Wheaton, if I recall correctly. And they're just going to have a big 25th anniversary blowout. And I think that's going to be really cool. And it's cool that they're sort of pulling out all the stops. Even if this won't actually transport you anywhere, it's still
right.
a nice little effect.
What I'm most looking forward to about the expo is the part where the transporter app breaks and Wesley comes and actually fixes it. that's why Will's going to be there. It's going to be an exciting moment. You have to buy special tickets for it, though.
As long as it doesn't break and we end up with two Jonathan Frakes.
Then they'll have the 10 principal cast members with William Riker and Thomas Riker.
Right.
As well. Okay. And after the expo is over, they're actually going to move these... I don't know if they're moving the entire bus shelters, but they're moving the panels anyway, over to the City of Vulcan, and they're going to be a permanent fixture there in the city. And that'll be done before June when Spock Days happens every year in the City of Vulcan.
Nice.
And so you'll be able to see those. If you can't make it to Calgary, you'll still be able to see this technology at work anytime that you visit Vulcan for the various Star Trek events that they have there throughout the year.
Very, very cool.
If you go over to our site, go to trek.fm, to the Hopper Channel News Journal, we do have a demonstration video of this online if you want to see how it works. All right. So, Greg, we've often heard, who's the most vocal, outgoing, outspoken person about their time on Star Trek? I think it would have to be Garrett Wong, probably, usually,
yeah.
right?
Garrett's up there. George Takei is well up there. There's usually like one guy from each series that just won't be quiet. You know, you got Wil Wheaton, George Takei, Garrett Wong. Not sure who would be on DS9. They've all kind of gone away, other than Avery Brooks still pops up now and again, but none of them is out in the news you might think of some of these others.
Right. Well, this time it's Enterprise, and we have Scott Bakula talking a little bit. But I will say, when Scott Bakula talks, I'm actually generally more interested because he always approaches it from a very professional point of view.
Yeah.
Of course, he was the lead, and he was very established before he was on the show. But he was talking recently, and he was talking about why Enterprise didn't make it 7 seasons, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he says that we were the victims of circumstances.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just get your thoughts on this. And what he talks about a lot was that there were a lot of political things that were happening at the time. I think he talks about the political things within, you know, we had that was around the time when Paramount and CBS was kind of splitting and the rights mm-hmm. were getting split up.
Yeah.
We also had kind of the evolution of UPN. We had a lot of turnover in the management at Paramount, at the studio at that time as well. And he says that he never really felt like they failed the Enterprise cast as much as they were just victims of circumstances.
Yeah. And I mean, what I messaged to you when I saw this was, I don't know, victims of circumstance, if circumstance means, you know, very bad decisions by very important people. And that's probably what he means, too. I mean, it's just they were the Star Trek series that was on when Star Trek was in flux, when the future of Star Trek was very uncertain. And it wasn't given the chance that other shows were given. It started off on a weird foot. You know, they sort of launched it as just Enterprise and trying to sort of pretend it wasn't Star Trek. And as it went on, it became more Star Trek. But then, you know, by then they'd already lost their core audience. Yeah, I definitely agree that the show was not given a chance. Really hoping that the sense we've gotten that the show is good and worth watching, I hope that spreads and that people start thinking better of it. I think he's spot on. And he knows what he's talking about. You know, he was on another genre show. He's on Quantum Leap beforehand. He knows how these things work. He's not just, you know, pulling this out of thin air.
Yeah, I agree there. You know, if you think back, Voyager was kind of on shaky ground itself in the latter half of that series, I think, in terms of, you know, the network and the ratings. They were very concerned about the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like if all of these circumstances at the studio and what was going on in terms of UPN's direction and where they were headed with programming, as well as the changes, if all that had happened, you know, maybe like 5 years earlier, do you feel like the same thing may have happened to Voyager? Maybe it would have ended after 4 or 5 seasons?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, it was whatever show was on at this time was going to get the short end of the dilithium stick. It's just, it had nothing to do with Enterprise being Enterprise. I mean, sure, there were issues on the writing staff and on both shows. And there are issues on the writing staff with all of the shows. But I don't think Enterprise was any worse at any point than any other show. It was just, it happened to be the show that was on when they realized, look, guys, we need to hit that big red reset button and just figure out where Star Trek really needs to go. Because obviously what we're doing isn't working.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, if you want to read a little bit more of what Bakula said, go over to treknews.net and you'll find an article over there with a bit more of his comments about this.
Asking if you were around, how you was and where
So, Greg, we do have a little bit of movie news this week, and this comes from Alex Kurtzman, and he was talking about how the movie's going a little bit, how the filming is going. And, of course, he says that J.J. Abrams is, I think his word was crushing it, which that's an interesting word there. My kids were watching Transformers the other night when I came home, and the Transformers were certainly crushing things. So I don't know if you got a little mix up there. JJ, Transformers, Star Trek, things crushing going on.
You know what I saw? I went to Target the other day, to see if they had any Star Trek toys. And no Star Trek toys anywhere. Maybe when the new movie comes out, we'll get some action figures. I really want an Uhura's and Spock's dog action figure. But aside from all that, they had Transformers Star Wars. You had Darth Vader that could transform into a Star Destroyer. It was branded with Transformers. You had Luke Skywalker would turn into a Rebel cruiser, it was Anakin. Anyway, good guy turned into the Jedi cruiser. Vader turned into the Death Star. Battle droid turned into like a assault tank something. It was the worst thing I've ever seen.
What about, did they have the special, the Star Wars Transformers Star Trek three-way crossover where Chewbacca transforms into a tribble?
He is just an overgrown tribble, isn't he?
Pretty much. All right. Well, the interesting thing that Kurtzman said here, of course, he's praising Benedict Cumberbatch, which everyone does. He's incredible. What he does with language is incredible. His training is incredible. He's incredibly magnetic.
He's crushing it, basically.
He's pretty much crushing it with his magnetism, I think, basically. He emits this amazing, incredible magnetic field. So, of course, I mean, how many interview? This is the thing with Hollywood directors, yeah. Actors, writers. Everyone is always incredible.
Yes.
Have you ever heard anyone say, you know, we really, really dropped the ball on casting in this movie. This guy we cast as the villain, it just sucks. I can't believe we did this. What are we going to do? Our box office is going to crash. You never hear anybody say anything like that.
We get that after the fact, you know, after everyone realizes what an awful decision it was. What was the episode? Too Short a Season. Sort of everyone admits that was terrible casting. But yeah, at this point, no one's going to say that Cumberbatch is doing anything other than completely Cumberbatching it.
Right. He's Cumberbatching it. And he probably is, you know. I'm sure he's doing a great job, so that's great. But you know, that news keeps coming out all the time from the different actors. But what I found interesting in here, actually, was a little bit of a hint of what might be happening with the crew dynamic. Because we've talked about before, are they going to just pick up where the last movie ended, where Captain Kirk's like 15 years old and he's the captain of the Federation flagship? Or are they going to jump ahead a little bit so that the crew is a little bit more seasoned, so we can maybe get into some meatier stories that don't focus on the crew as much, but focus more on the ideas of Star Trek? He said that without spoiling anything, the challenge is that you don't want to jump too far ahead and assume that just because they got together, they're all comfortable with each other. They're still all working out their kinks and still becoming the bridge crew that we remember from the series. That's still very much alive. And look, any good sequel is about the challenge that the group faces in order to become the unified team. And I think that the challenge in this movie is going to be hopefully amazing.
So what can expect many more scenes of Sulu leaving the parking brake on. Chekhov still can't pronounce the letter V. This is what I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think maybe Spock and Uhura becoming more familiar with one another.
I'm sure that's going to be the opening credits scene, is Spock and Uhura becoming quite familiar.
So it sounds like they're not going to have the crew being... It's not going to be like 5 years in the future, you know, where everyone's super comfortable with each other.
Right,
I'm hoping that it's not going to be like 3 weeks later kind of thing.
Well, we know at least that all the events that are going on in the comic have to have passed. So it's going to be at least several months, if not a year, just before we hop back into it. So, but I think they're just saying that doesn't mean these people are going to be seasoned pros. You know, there won't be the old pros from Dover. They're still going to be a young crew. It's still going to be figuring out the dynamics, still falling in love with each other. We're just going to pick up where we left off, I think is basically what he's trying to say. You know, don't feel like this is the difference between like the original series and then the motion picture, where five years have passed. You know, Kirk's already an admiral, already losing his eyesight. They're not going to go down that road.
Kirk's like a 22-year-old admiral,
right?
With blue pastel bell bottom pants and a yeah.
I'd see that movie, but I don't think anyone else would.
McCoy's got a bitchin' medallion on, and yeah,
nice.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. They're not going to remake the motion picture here.
I do hope they'll give McCoy a beard for the new film. McCoy always looks better in a beard, and I don't know why they don't go with it more often.
All right. Well, we'll see where it goes. I'll have fun speculating myself on what this means in terms of the storyline. I'm still hoping for a meatier, deeper story next time.
Yes.
So Tom Paris's father always told him that one day he would do something very special. But I have a feeling that what he didn't have in mind was a mating with his captain. And as Greg just told me, this is a salamander love story that we're going to talk about today. This is the almost universally hated episode of Voyager, Threshold, which has been called by some the Spock's brain moment of Voyager. And I'm not sure if I totally agree with that, but we're going to talk about it today. And of course, I have Greg with me, and also joining us today from the UK, we have Colin of Trek News and Views. How are you doing, Colin?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I say that good morning because it's 10 to 2 in the morning. Yeah.
Yes. We are coordinating so many time zones, and Colin ended up with the early morning shift here.
Yeah.
That's right. And we also have with us our Voyager editor, Charlene, also of the Delta Quadrant podcast. Hey, Charlene.
Hey, yo. Thanks for having me back.
How's it going?
Welcome.
All right, guys. So let's talk about this story in which Paris gets down and slimy with Janeway, you know, because they turn into slugs at the end of the story is, you know, what I mean there. So, oh, goodness. This is an interesting episode, and I know most people hate this episode, and I actually kind of like this episode for the most part. But how about, Charlene, let's start with you here as the person who does Voyager podcasts exclusively every week. What's your take on Threshold, just
all right,
basically?
Okay. Where do I begin? You know, okay.
You're speechless.
I rewatched the episode earlier today. And I thought, you know what, the first 35 minutes or so of this episode are not bad. Brega is definitely opening a big door with the whole warp 10 transwarp thing. But he goes there. Okay, fine, you do that. But then he realizes, I think, with those last 10 minutes he's got left to write, oh my gosh, how am I going to get myself out of this? What have I done? And so those last 10 minutes, we get the weirdest, like, hallucinogenic trip ever to make it through to the pages of a script. And just, wow, dude. Wow. I'm not sure whether to give him props for his creativity or just cry. I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's so completely off the wall. But before everything goes completely awry, it's not that bad. Not that bad. It's not great. It's not that bad. Whereas I think Spock's brain is kind of, you know, a little bad throughout the whole story. It's kitschy. It's definitely that old style Trek with that weird what the heck element added to it. Whereas this, it goes okay for a while, and then all of a sudden, boom! Okay, what did you just do here? Holy whoa.
Okay, so you're kind of, I don't know, speechless and wowed by the whole thing, I guess.
Yeah, but my inarticulate expression notwithstanding, yes.
I feel, I think, very similar to how you feel about it. But how about you, Colin? Is this your Spock's brain moment?
Kind of hard to follow what Charlene just said.
Nonsense.
But I do like the way you got the hallucinogenic trips and the dude quotes all in the same paragraph. I thought that was kind of good.
I think that's appropriate for Brian Braga.
Nice 70s link there. As long as you think Fred Herbert scene, we'll be all right. but I did like the start of it. It was interesting the way they come to the conclusion of how they could do it. You know, we can't solve this warp 9 problem, this warp 10. Let's go ask Neelix.
Right.
Well, no. They don't ask Neelix. Neelix just butts his way in and says, well, you know, I know some things about warp drive. I've used one before. Maybe I can help.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit like Mayweather in Enterprise. I've been in space before, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Remember me? I've been in space before.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen a warp engine before. Maybe I can help you.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that.
Yeah. The way they come to the conclusion, and I didn't get the fact that it, just because something works on the holodeck, because everyone knows how reliable the holodecks are, so if you can get it to work on the holodeck, it's going to work in real space.
Yeah, of course. And that's exactly what happened right here.
Exactly. Although the simulator didn't work out about the turning into a slug bit.
Well, it couldn't account.
Yeah, the computer
for that.
Forgot about that part, didn't they?
Yeah.
I wonder, do you think if the holodeck had played it out and they had turned into slugs, do you think they would have still gone ahead? Do you think Chakotay would have said, are we ready for it? Are we ready to be slugs?
Well, I figured they probably would have just figured that was like a... Well, that's a malfunction. Yeah. That's a holodeck malfunction. This happens all the time. When we actually do warp 10, that...
It's just...
Yeah, ignore
I think
that
this
part.
Is just getting mixed up with one of Neelix's culinary school programs. Right?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I also didn't get the bit about how you can be everywhere all at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure Q will have something to say about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And why hasn't Q said anything about that?
So you wanted Q, when he comes on the show later, you wanted him to say, oh, by the way, Captain.
I know what
that
you
mission
were doing
that you went
a few
on
episodes
a few
back.
Weeks ago. Yeah.
You know,
that was,
I would have loved
it's kinda
it
weird.
If Q would have given Janeway some heck about having salamander babies with Tom Paris.
Oh, that would have been great.
Oh, could you imagine the way he... Oh,
babies.
Man. Oh, we missed a really important moment here.
So later, like in the Q and the Gray, when Janeway doesn't want to have a baby with Q, Q could have said, well, what's wrong with me? You had salamander babies with Paris.
Exactly. Yeah. It was that simple and they missed it.
Well, that's the problem with Voyager. You don't get that continuity like you got on Deep Space Nine. See, on Deep Space Nine, he would have said, you know, hey, Sisko, you know, why don't
it's
you want
to
sleep with me? You slept with Dax in the Mirror Universe, and she used to be Curzon.
What a shame uncovered right here.
Right.
Yeah. I'm so disappointed now.
Did Q know, and that's why they turned into slugs?
Oh, so you think Q turned them into slugs, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that could make a lot more sense than anything that happened here.
It would make more sense in the script, that's for sure. And I'd be much more willing to buy that explanation.
So, wait, So what, I mean, the concept that Brandon had was that, you know, we're going to be, he thought, well, we need something obviously to happen when we go to warp 10, and it can't just work, otherwise we don't have an episode. And so he had this idea of hyper evolution. But I'm missing how he didn't get it onto screen, how hyper evolution means turning into slugs. I get that he was kind of trying to go against the grain, but when you're going to do something that outlandish, how do you not manage to put it on the screen? Have someone say, well, they seem to be extremely, extremely psychic or something like that, that indicates that they're on some level better than us. All we see is like skin falling off Paris, and then he gets all bug-eyed, and then he's a salamander.
Well, this is the thing. That is the weird thing. Now, apparently, Braga has said that his concept is interesting. The problem is that I think somewhere along the line told him, you don't need this to be in the episode, this explanation, so take it out. Because the idea, yes, is that evolution, we think that evolution always means that we're advancing. You know, our brains are getting larger and we're kind of evolving into these higher beings. But perhaps that's not how it works. Perhaps at some point the environment causes us to kind of evolve to an earlier state in a way. But that's so he said that that explanation actually was in the script at one point in time, and it was removed.
Right.
And because it was removed, when you get to the end of the episode, none of this makes any sense. Because you see Paris is changing. I mean, at first you think he's just mutating, and then we find out, well, he's evolving, and the doctor says maybe Paris represents a future state of human evolution. And then he has two hearts, which would obviously be kind of an advancement in evolution.
Right.
Like, well, if one heart goes bad, we have a second one. We have a fallback mechanism. Okay, so that all makes sense.
Right.
Up to
like
that
the
point.
Klingons.
Yeah, like the Klingons have that. And that makes sense that he's evolving. But then suddenly, they're slugs. And so we lose that entire connection. And like you said, Greg, how does that not get onto the screen is kind of beyond me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think we can all agree, we can all disagree on when exactly the show goes off the rails.
You said after 5
but
minutes.
But certainly, I really think so. I think by the time they're talking about Warp 10 and they attribute it to finding some new dilithium on an asteroid. I mean, if warp engineers for, 400 years, 300 years at this point, haven't figured out how to advance past, 999, how did they just magically find some dilithium that does warp 10? That just doesn't make sense. This makes as much sense as that episode. It opens up with Paris saying, what's the first thing they teach you about warp theory? No turning. It's like, well, no, that's not right. That's incorrect.
You open up your warp theory book, and on page one in big letters, no turning. Okay, now let's go on and learn about
this. The thing is to bear in mind here, though, is they evolve into slugs. And then in Voyager, you've got the dinosaurs who have transwarp ships. So
that's
did
true.
They get transwarp ships before they got to the quadrants or after?
Well, that's interesting. Because I did forget it. I always forget about those dinosaur people.
Yeah. And in which case,
and
if
what
they
were capable of
after they got to the quadrants, why did not that change into humans?
Hmm.
Interesting point.
Well, I think that highlights the frequency on Voyager in which the writers contradict earlier stories.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Like there's no, I shouldn't say there's no, but there seems to be less concern with going back and checking what we did in the past.
Yeah.
What we did last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On Voyager.
Well, there were several different supervising producers over the course of Voyager, and I think each new one came in and threw out a lot of the old stuff, and not completely, but just said, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this instead. And that's just what they did. I think what I was going to say a moment ago is we can all agree that by the end of this episode, it is completely off the rails. I mean, they make no effort in the whole final act to bring it into any semblance of sense.
No, you're right.
And there's even that bit where Janeway is just completely nonchalant about having salamander babies.
Yes.
And
in fact, she suggests it might have been her idea, right?
Yeah. I mean,
right.
Wow. Of all times to be kind of carefree about a situation. Wow, right. Janeway, you're really not taking this seriously at all, are you?
Right. I know that the original Star Trek liked to have their whole, you know, knee slapping on the bridge finales. But if, I don't know, if Kirk went off and had salamander babies with Nurse Chapel, I just feel like they would have had a hard time having a laugh about it at the end. It's a kind of freaky thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a little too weird to have a laugh about it at the end.
And Janeway is supposed to be this massively responsible mother figure of the entire crew.
Yeah.
Does she ever go back and sort out a creche or a school or maintenance payments? You know, she just leaves them to me.
Right.
Yeah.
I think
that
what they
really
should have done for the knee slapping moment is on the bridge on the view screen, they could have put pictures of the salamander babies and they could have like superimposed Janeway's face and Paris's face and said, you know, this is what the babies look like. And the whole crew could just crack up laughing. It would have been like a TOS ending then.
Well, didn't they, when the finale came along after they got home, they put up on screen in loving memory of the salamander babies.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really sweet. Sweet callback.
And we would have found out
and
their names.
Yeah, yeah, they
named.
People don't remember that part, Greg, because it gets cut on the TV release these days. They cut that off.
Oh,
You need to go check the DVD. It has the full release on it, and you can see that bit with the they actually have the salamander babies sign their names at the end in script.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very nice.
That would be excellent. Now I don't know if they had thumbs or not, but that could be really interesting to see if they could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, you don't need thumbs these days. You just use a touch screen. Put your little.
That's
what do they
true.
Have? They have paws. What do they have? They just scratch it out on
the
screen.
I don't even know what they have.
Scratch it on the screen.
Yeah, but you got the movie spin-off and all. You've got Wrath of Threshold, where the salamander babies come back in 15 years and hunt down Janeway.
Yeah. You abandoned us!
Yeah. So here's a question for you guys. Think of this episode for a minute. If this had been a Next Generation episode, how do you think this would have been handled? Because...
Well, it would have been Troy having the babies, certainly.
Without a doubt, yes.
It always happens
it would
to
always
Deanna.
Be her, yeah.
And who would have been the father?
Well, it would have been Riker, I'm sure.
Oh, no, no,
yeah,
no,
Riker.
No, no.
Yeah,
okay,
they
no, no,
just
no.
Made it
if
Riker.
They're going to put Janeway and Paris together, it's got to be just as awkward
That's
of a
true.
Pair like Troy and Geordi.
Troy and Geordi.
No, we can't be Geordi. Geordi never mated.
Right.
Well, that's why it would be that unusual.
As they said on Dork Trek, Riker's been with more men than Geordi's been with women.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Geordi wouldn't know what to do because, yeah, he has no experience with women. So.
Even as a salamander, Geordi doesn't know what to do.
Geordi, yeah. Wow.
Geordi would still be on the holodeck getting instructions. Yeah.
That's right.
True.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, he'd be running
maybe not Geordi.
He'd be running the salamander mating program on the holodeck to try to figure out. Because even as a salamander, he can't get any action. But what
Argyle.
I mean, though, is the problem here... Oh, gosh, Argyle. Argyle and Troy have salamander babies.
Wow.
So that's Those what Argyle's been
kids.
Doing.
Well, it can't be Barclay, because Barclay turned into a spider. So.
Right, we know that won't happen.
They would have spider babies if it were Barclay.
Oh, of course, okay. In that episode of TNG, that was devolving. We're talking about evolving,
right.
Which, and I mean, you know,
right.
Brannon Braga totally slaughters the whole idea of evolution, which is adapting to your circumstance so you stay alive. How can you do that when you're hyper-evolving? That makes no sense either.
Well, and evolution happens over generations. It doesn't happen to a single individual.
Yeah.
That's pretty much, when you open up the evolution book, that's the first page.
Wait a minute.
Happens over generations.
Are you guys
right
saying
no
that there's yes, no turning.
Right.
Are you guys saying that there's something wrong with the science in this episode?
Maybe a little.
Thought.
I know it's shocking.
One flaw in the
bum,
argument,
bum.
And that's the fact that if it was Deanna, she would have crashed the shuttle.
They wouldn't have made it to the fourth planet of that system,
no.
right?
Right.
So, but no, my question here is the problem with this concept is that and like you just said, they're devolving. What they're actually doing here is they're evolving, and the evolution takes them to a state that resembles an earlier state, but we don't get that on the screen. You know, we think that they're evolving, and then at the end, we think that they've devolved. I've seen this episode many, many times, and it was only yesterday where I finally really thought about it and you know, looked up some of Braga's explanations over the years of this episode and realized that what seems like they are devolving is actually the end of this hyper evolution. It doesn't make any sense. But on The Next Generation, I think that this episode, that instead of spending all the time with Paris's skin falling off and trying to get Kes to come in and kiss him and stuff like that, they would have actually talked about evolution. They would have talked about what is happening to him. And they would have had some staff meetings and talked about what's happening,
which
we don't get any of that on here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, they never discuss what's happening. That's a very good point. And I mean, part of it is, as you say, they spent a lot of time with Paris. with Paris. This was a big Paris episode. Let's let Robbie McNeil just act his heart out, both of his hearts.
and does.
Robbie, you really acted your heart out on this one. Good job.
He really did. He did go all out.
I mean,
out.
He really, he does. He chews up the scenery.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. And it's nice to get inside of his head. And I think, okay, if we're going to talk real quick, that's the part of this episode that does get ignored because it's so easy to focus on the salamanders. But it is, at its core, a story about Paris trying to be the next Chuck Yeager. And sure, it completely deviates. But while it's on that track, it's actually kind of an interesting episode. Don't you guys agree?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You did hit at the core what this episode is really supposed to be about. It just gets so thrown into the background with all this other nonsense that it's easy to forget that. And that in and itself is good. It's a good idea. But then we have salamanders. And there's nothing else to say.
Right. I mean, why couldn't... I mean, I'd love to just figure out a different ending. I mean, obviously, Warp 10 can't work. It has to be something interesting that happens. But why couldn't have just something else have happened with Warp 10? Like, he gets sucked into alternate dimension where they're attacked by the Borg. I don't know. Something...
Yeah.
Some way that Warp 10 doesn't... I mean... We've had so many times we've crossed a barrier. You know, people were afraid of trains. People were afraid of the sound barrier. People were afraid of going into space. And nothing really ever happened. Like, we knew what we were going to do. We went through it. And even in Star Trek, when we cross, you know, the light barrier, nothing hugely happened. But suddenly with Warp 10, it's going to cause hyper-evolution? That's a leap they never needed to make. And there were so many of other directions the show could have gone in. That would have been way more interesting.
No, you're absolutely right.
What point does transwarp start? Because I would have thought transwarp would have been warp 10.
Isn't transwarp more of a space folding something or another?
Yeah,
it's not
like your infinite points throughout the entire universe. That's what the threshold is supposed to be.
Because in the Voyager end, the very ending, they go for a transwarp.
Right, but that's more talking about like a wormhole. Like you take space and you pull it together, and then you just have to cross over. It's not the idea of warp 10 that they do in this episode, where you're occupying all portions, which sounds like a navigational nightmare. I mean, how do you push the button to get out? It's like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy with the improbability engine.
I was going to say all this. It's the infinite improbability drive. It's exactly in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. When you use the infinite improbability drive, you're basically occupying every point in the universe at the same time, and then you come out of it. And so that's exactly what I think the problem here is, that Paris forgot to take his towel, and so if he had his towel with him, none of this salamander stuff would have happened. He would have been all right. He broke the cardinal rule.
Don't forget to bring a towel. One of the best lessons.
And what if you still
turned
into a salamander if you had a fish in his ear?
Yeah, good question. Also, he forgot to drink a few pints and eat peanuts before he, you know, broke the threshold.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's watching baseball today, but everyone is wearing their number 42 jersey. And it took me a good hour to figure out it was Jackie Robinson Day. I thought everyone in Major League Baseball was just huge Hitchhikers fans. And it was really freaking
me out. It's
Douglas
Adams Day in Major League Baseball.
Don't forget your bring your towel to the stadium and receive a free slushie.
I can't wait till they all wear their 47 jerseys.
Yeah!
Right, exactly.
So, okay, and about Transwarp 2, this is the other thing. Let's not forget that in The Search for Spock, the Excelsior was supposed to have Transwarp Drive.
Yeah.
So this is some new thing. I mean, so they were going to send the Excelsior out, and the Excelsior was going to occupy every point in the universe at the same time.
Well, that was...
That was...
To be completely nerdy, that was before they changed what the warp spectrum was, and, you know, warp 8 in the original series doesn't mean what warp 8 means in next gen. And so that's the explanation, supposedly.
And it was Transwarp, not Warp 10.
True.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't called Warp 10. It was Transwarp Drive.
Which makes me wonder, in Enterprise, when they're going Warp 5, is that TOS Warp 5? Is that Next Gen Warp 5? Is that some new scale that's an Enterprise and it's really just like half impulse?
Yeah,
you've got TNG episode where Riker's ship's doing, is it Warp 14?
Yeah, or 13.
Galaxy Dreadnought.
Oh, really?
All good things when they're in the future. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's after they change the scale again, you see.
In the future, they change
Leave the scale alone.
It's kind of...
They just keep changing it every
time.
It's
like with currency, you know, when a currency devalues too much and they just take a couple of zeros off the end. It's kind of like that.
Right, yeah, it's kind of like
with
that.
Warp. They take like two warp levels off. They just shift everything. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So if you go like to the 30th century, they're doing like warp 26.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really just warp 9.7.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just too flashy.
And only the best ships can go warp 9.7779.
Yeah.
But just this concept, though, of occupying every point in the universe at once. I mean, to me, I getting there by going warp 10, I think is kind of weird. But I think the idea of being able to occupy every point in the universe at once is kind of interesting. I think it's an interesting concept that you could explore in an episode.
Yeah, it's definitely intriguing. But that said, I think you're opening a major can of worms by doing this. And I don't really think Brannon Braga really knew what to do with it once he decided to go with it. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of get the hot mess that follows afterward.
Right. And I think it's very symptomatic of, you know, it's when all you have is a hammer, every problem is a nail. With Voyager, their problem was that they needed to get home. So every episode needed to, or at least they felt like, especially this early on in the show, every episode needed to impact them getting home. So let's do this because this can help us get home. Right. Let's do this or that. And yeah, this would have been more interesting as a Next Gen episode because it wouldn't have been so tied up in getting home. And they could have just focused on the scientific, the theoretical bits of it. And that also would have made it a lot less unbelievable because it would have happened within Starfleet and there would have been actual, you know, very intelligent people working on it, not just Harry Kim.
You've also got the other thing. If you're occupying every point in space and time and there's more than one ship, then how can you all occupy every point in space and time?
And be together.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then, my brain just imploded.
So if you have a fleet of ships that can go warp 10, are they all going to be in the same space at the same time?
I guess they're all going to be everywhere at the same time. So they have to look at each other, right? Because Paris says that, I saw that you were looking for me, so I took the new engines offline and I reappeared here. So if he saw someone playing a game of pool back on Earth and he wanted to go play and he turned off the engines, is he going to like pop up in the cafe in the pool
Maybe.
Hall?
That would have been really amusing.
Would've. Yeah, I don't know. It's a fascinating concept, but man... Yeah.
Imagine how Riker would use this. He sees some like hot woman somewhere in the universe, and he turns off the engines and
he
pops up
her.
In her bedroom.
Right. Riker just circles in warp 10 all night until he finds the hottest girl, and then just boop, boop, boop.
Shuts off the engines.
Or does he drop marker boys? So I'll come back to that one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
And can can he go to many places in one night in that sense?
Well, this is Riker we're talking about, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all night, every night.
What about Janeway here? Now, Janeway, we talked about on the other side of the room a little bit, that she was very, very passive about all of this new technology. She and Chakotay, too, really, for that matter. It's kind of like, well, you know, this is extremely dangerous, and we have no idea how this is going to affect the ship or Paris or the space-time continuum or if we're going to erase the Federation from history or whatever. But what the hell? Let's do it. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if that staff meeting had been about anything else, you know, Janeway, we're thinking about a virus that would kill off, you know, all Kazon and Klingons and Vulcans. You know, we probably won't use it, but we're just, you know, we're developing it. Janeway would just be like, you know, whatever. It's science. Science is usually helpful, right? Yeah?
Hmm? Yeah, Janeway would have had no problem with a Genesis torpedo.
Right.
Right.
Good one.
That would have been her last ditch effort. That if we know we can't get home, we'll just find a lifeless planetoid and use the Genesis torpedo on it, and
right.
And then build a tent, live with Chakotay. Right. You know.
Yeah. Then Chakotay and I.
This
can
is yet another.
Have babies.
Finally,
you can build me a bath.
Right. Human babies.
Human babies.
I would say this is yet another concept getting thrown into a really crowded episode. Now, we're thinking about Warp 10. We're thinking about Paris and his daddy issues, salamander babies. We're also talking about tinkering with technology and not thinking through the consequences. And wow, that's another thing we just did not need in this episode. It completely lacked focus. And the passivity of Janeway is another example of that, where if this were any other episode, I really feel like Janeway would have sat people down and said, you know, does this really make sense? Should we actually be doing this? And even the scene where she's telling Paris, you can't go because of this very good reason. All he has to do is, you know, do a little Luke Skywalker whining and suddenly it's okay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But I wanted to go to Warp 10 to pick up some power converters.
Well, maybe next year you can go Warp 10.
Yeah. If you're really good, but only if you're a really good boy, Tommy.
Right. And you got to find me some...
Yeah, no, she really is passive in this episode. Yeah. And you would think, as a scientist, okay, yeah, this certainly has piqued her curiosity, but she, of all people, should know we've got to take a lot of precautions with this kind of a thing. But no.
No, apparently, no, that's go for it. I mean, this is sort of like Google's 30% time. Like, you're developing Warp 10? Go right for it. You know, we're not going to take it. Oh, Google Plus? Yeah, no, that sounds like a great idea. Go for it.
Pretty much.
So maybe they should have been developing Space Google Plus instead of
Warp 10 engines. I think this was the Google Wave.
Yeah, this was Google Wave.
It's probably an X Prize.
Don't you think that Janeway seems to have more of a problem with Neelix's culinary experiments than she does with B'Elanna and Tom and Paris working on all kinds of scientific and engineering experiments?
Her priorities are messed up.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe it was a bit of foresight, though, because when Paris started turning into a salamander, he was allergic to Neelix's coffee.
That's true, and I did like that point.
Very true.
The doctor had some great line. In the episode, saying, I'm surprised that didn't kill him or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he says it's a miracle he's still alive.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I feel like Brandon kept, like, hitting points where he's like, oh, hey, this is a scene that could be actually really interesting. Let me have the doctor say some funny things. Like, he's, like, wandering through the woods and every once in a while hits upon an oasis and writes a good scene and then right back into the woods.
Yeah, now what? Okay. Oh, let's do this! And it has nothing to do with anything else, but I've got to find a way to integrate it.
Now he wants to kiss Kes for some reason.
Yeah, and he wants pepperoni pizza. Cool, I'm going to go with that. All right. Wrote it down. Works for me. All right, next scene.
I actually liked Robbie McNeil's performance, though, during all that scene with the pepperoni pizza and all, just because I thought he did a good job of portraying someone who's kind of losing their mind. There's you can tell there's like these random thoughts coming into Paris's mind at that point.
Yeah. Robbie McNeil knocks this out of the park. He really just acts like, you know, this is his last job ever. He does an amazing job with it. I mean, granted, the material is questionable. He definitely gives it the top-notch treatment here.
Although the part his tongue falls out, the rest of all that scene there, I keep picturing Michael Richards as Kramer after he went to the dentist and his mouth was numb and he got in the taxi and the guy thought he was a special needs patient and he ends up being like a guest of honor at this banquet that night. That's what I kept picturing the whole rest of the time in this episode. And Paris, the hyper-evolving Paris, is like, please, please let me out of here.
Yeah. Like that. Nice. That was a good imitation.
Wow. Yeah, that, I mean, that does explain why I had the action figure for Paris that they actually released back in 1996. That explains why it was labeled Special Needs Paris. I always found that a little confused. But apparently Playmate was confused as well.
I think so. Special Needs Paris with slug babies.
Yes.
And Greg, if I recall correctly, the Playmate figure, they also included the phaser so that you could shoot Janeway, right? I think that actually was in the pack. Yeah.
It was, yes.
Another point here, though, is that I don't know if you guys realize this, but this episode actually won an Emmy Award.
Yes, it did.
For best makeup. Thank goodness Martin Short was not up for honors that year.
Exactly. Regeneration couldn't win for its Borg makeup, but by hell, we're going to give it to hyper-evolved Paris and the computer-generated slugs.
Hey, I tell you what, though. The makeup department did do a superb job. For every little stage Tom Paris went through, I bought it. I believed it. I thought it was fantastic. And hey, good for them. They were also up against DS9's The Visitor for that award and beat them out, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess because theirs was more grotesque.
Yeah, well, shock value. It goes far.
Grossness wins.
It does.
Yeah. I thought they won the Emmy for that one scene that included the Kazon.
Oh, you must be talking about this episode's Z story. He's a spy! He's a spy! Boy, talk about trying to just cram everything into one episode here. But was that just kind of out of nowhere?
It really was.
Well, there was there had been an episode before sort of setting him up as a Kazon informant. Yeah. And it does go somewhere down the line if you recall your Voyager history. But it's so weird when you watch this episode out of order, or even in order, I think, because it's just, he sort of recaps it. Like, you know, last week on Star Trek Voyager, Mr. Kazon.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Did you hear what happened on Star Trek Voyager?
Star Trek Voyager!
No, I watched this episode earlier today just by itself, and taken out of the context of, knowing what is going on with this character, there's no introduction to it, there's no real conclusion, it's just there, throw it in, okay.
Yeah.
I can picture the UPN promo for this episode was probably something like, a new technology, an unknown reality, and a spy.
Yeah.
Will this information lead the Kazon to Voyager?
You're
find out on the next Star Trek Voyager. Like they forget
the whole thing about
Paris and the warp flight, and it's all about Jonas, right?
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
That's exactly what it would have been.
Yeah, I want to go back in time. Maybe I could use warp 10 myself, and just tell the Voyager writers, don't bother with continuity. It's not for you. You know, leave that to DS9.
Actually, I think you've already done that. So before you, probably at some point in the future, you have actually gone back in time and they listened to you.
Yeah, there's probably some really horrible paradox here. Future is the past is the future. Oh, it all gives me a headache.
Riker's going to do an interview in about 10 years' time when the Freedom of Information Act delays him too, and he's going to say, what happened was this guy called Greg came to see me in the office one day, and this is what happened.
Right.
But they're going to say, but he claimed his name was Mike.
Right. Yes. Of course, of course.
Yeah, that's my alter
ego. Some
geezer
called Dan sent him.
But they keep experimenting with continuity, like here or there. And yeah, as you say, it doesn't work because it's not connected to anything. And certainly in this episode, you know, when you're cutting stuff, you got to cut anything that doesn't have to do with the main story. You can't just have a scene out of nowhere in the middle of the episode that has no connection to anything else. And I mean, I know the character comes back, but does the whole Warp 10 thing come back the next time Jonas appears? Oh guys, the Warp 10 thing didn't work out, but blah, blah. No, it just was the scene in here just to remind you that they're trying to do continuity.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he could have been passing along Neelix's new Paris Delight coffee blend recipe, right? It would have achieved the same purpose.
True.
Yes, exactly.
But exactly, though. So they remove the part of the episode that actually gives you some kind of explanation about what's happening in terms of the hyper-evolution. But they leave in the... if you count the one where he gives them the little kind of, oh, that's an interesting bit of information look. And then later he talks to the Kazon. They leave those two scenes in, which takes up...
You know what they should have done is have Jonas explain to the Kazon about hyper-evolution.
Going to a deep explanation with charts and diagrams. Yes. And yeah.
Right. You see, Mr. Kazon, if we advance past this point, you see we're actually going to return to the water.
And then he holds this little floppy thing up to the screen and he says, "This used to be Mr. Paris's tongue."
I don't think the Kazon would have understood.
No.
Probably not.
Actually, Paris's tongue would have looked like a bit of their hair, wouldn't it? So.
Probably.
They probably That's would have disgusting. Used it as an earring or something.
Oh, yeah, correct.
Right.
It'll be a new fad. Noticed, pretty soon, all the Kazon sick. Will have tongues hanging
tongue
off their ears.
Tongue earrings, yes.
Have you noticed how many times in Star Trek they cure sickness with radiation therapy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this one was extreme. I mean, this one was like, let's like actually pipe, what was it, anti-protons? Is that what they used?
Yeah.
From the warp core. Yeah. Let's spit those directly into him. I don't recall them actually doing that before.
Yeah, they've got to take the warp core offline to do this.
Yeah. I mean, and I know Dr. Pulaski is the only one who can really pull off the whole restore from backup transporter trick. But this seems like this would be a point where it really would have been a good idea to try that one before the anti-proton
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yes.
They did kind of know that Paris wasn't going to moan because he had no tongue.
So. Yeah, he could just lay there and open up his mouth.
Let me go.
Adrian! Adrian! Kissy!
Pepperoni!
But yeah, we know from past Star Trek, various series, that they sometimes will go and get the transporter, pattern buffer, backup data. But that like never even comes up in here. It's never even considered as an option.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we need to take
the
warp core.
After they upgraded to iTunes 11, it just, that function broke, basically. Right. And
It wasn't removed. But it was like in iOS 5.1, in the music app for podcasts, all the chapter names disappear now. And they just say chapter 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
So like here with the transporter pattern buffer, it doesn't have anyone's name anymore. It's just data.
Yeah.
It just says like crew member A, crew member B, crew member C, and you have no clue who it really goes to. So maybe if they used it, you know, Paris would have come out with like large breasts or something.
He might have liked that.
It could have been an improvement over the salamander.
Right. Then he would never report for duty. He'd be in his quarters all the time.
maybe that's something they bought in after they ended up with Thomas Riker.
Right. That could be.
Yeah.
Maybe so. Yeah, let's not do this anymore.
Just erase all transporter logs immediately upon transport. I don't care if they die. Erase it.
Oh, man. But so instead of trying that, this like, let's take the warp engines offline and let's channel the warp energy into this containment field in sickbay and see, you know, it's...
Yeah, at this point...
Warp did this to him. Maybe warp can get him out of it.
Well, no, they had to like create this interface for him in engineering. He's not in sickbay.
In 1 hour, too.
It was right.
It was like an episode of The Apprentice. It's like you have 1 hour right. to develop a warp to sick bay conduit mechanism that's never been used before. Right. Whichever team builds the best conduit may get a job as assistant chief engineer on a Federation starship.
Right. And if you don't, right. you're fired.
Right.
And then your airlock.
The obvious idea was just put the engine in reverse.
Well, also, they have this scene where it's a great sort of homage to the original series where B'Elanna is telling Janeway it's going to take like 12 hours and Janeway says, you have one. But then they cut to engineering and B'Elanna's just sort of tapping buttons slowly and wandering from one console to the other. It's like, no, literally, guys, you have like 5 minutes or else he's dead. And he's like, bloop, bloop. Did that work? No? Okay, how about bloop? It's like, no, come on, guys. I need to see some, you know, this needs to look like The Apprentice. You need to be running around, you know, jumping over bulkheads, yeah. you know.
We need do a barrel something. Roll.
Do a barrel roll. The barrel roll. Press
this is your future husband we're talking about.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, come on. Step on it.
Right. And wouldn't Paris have known at this point that he was going to marry B'Elanna? Because he was in the past, exactly. present, and future yeah. all at once, right?
Yeah. Theoretically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
if you actually look at the story and take it to its logical conclusion, which is not something Brennan Braga bothered to do.
Well, it's not something you should do, I don't think.
No.
At true. Least
your head
not until blow. You've not until you've had a good bit to drink first, right?
Right. Well, so Brandon was so proud of this episode that he actually named a future TV show of his after that episode. Did you know that there was a show he created called Threshold, which got quickly canceled? Thank God.
So yeah, that's.
Oh, well, gee, I wonder.
You think
why.
He would have learned his lesson?
It was the show where they go. Through like a time portal to an Earth where everything is occupied, the whole world is occupied by sentient salamanders, right?
Yes.
So
yes,
he just
exactly.
couldn't let go of this concept then.
I guess so.
Do all the females talk with a deep gravelly voice as well?
Right. But Brandon basically apologized to everyone eventually. I know, Chris, you don't hate the episode, but yeah, he pretty much came down on the side of the fans and said, this was not a good episode. I don't know what I was trying for. But one interesting thing he does say is that he was trying to do The Fly. And that is an interesting idea and that is in there somewhere, that he was trying to do that great Cronenberg film with Jeff Goldblum. I wish the whole episode had been that, or the whole episode had been The Warp 10, or the whole episode had been about salamanders, you know, mating. Pick one of those. Don't pick all three and stick them into one episode.
Yeah, that's true. This episode's all over the place.
Too many stories.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they should have turned into giant flies at the end. But yeah, I mean, really, I think at the end, if the warp... anti-protons from the warp engines had worked and they could just restore Paris, and then they could just kind of talk at the end about, well, these seem to be the consequences if we try to get a warp 10, so this is not an option for us to get home. I mean, that would have been that ending would have made more sense than the whole hyper evolution
so
up to
better.
That point would have been easier to follow than the ending.
Definitely.
I feel like, okay, so Greg, you said that I kind of like this episode. I like the concepts. I like the discussion about evolution. I like the idea of occupying every point in the universe at the same time.
Mm.
So I think it's overall an interesting concept. But then when you do get to the end, because they took out that explanation of what was going on, it does fall apart. It goes off the rails for me. And but I will say too, at the beginning, now Greg, you said it goes off the rails like 5 minutes in. I do think at the beginning they just do. There's so much of this tech thing at the beginning. The explanations are just, and it's another problem with Voyager throughout the series, that the people on this ship, and remember, this is a small ship, And these are not necessarily the most elite officers in Starfleet. I mean, the Enterprise is the flagship. So when you have Data, who is a computer, and you have Geordi, who has to be one of the most elite engineers in Starfleet, or he would not be the chief engineer of the flagship.
Yeah.
You know, when they solve problems, I feel a little bit more like, well, A, they're in the Alpha Quadrant, and they can communicate with Starfleet, so they can communicate with the Daystrom Institute and other people, and they can solve these mm-hmm. problems. On Voyager, it just seems like they come up with solutions that the best scientists in the Federation have not been able to create these devices or solve these problems, but somehow Voyager's crew quickly come up with these great solutions to insurmountable yeah. problems, and this was another example. And at the beginning, all the tech that they're doing, and then Neelix comes in. You know, of course, he butts his way in. But, you know, they tell Neelix, oh, you're a genius. I found the whole thing about, well, maybe the nacelles aren't being ripped off the ship. Maybe the ship is being ripped off of the nacelles. I'm like, what's the difference here? They're both coming right. apart from each other, right? I mean, I suppose that if I really, really think about it, yeah, okay, well, maybe at that speed, one portion is somehow moving slightly faster than the other one, and maybe technically one's being ripped off the other, but is that really a solution to this? So,
And why is that seen in this episode? I mean, what does it have to do with Paris's journey? What does it have to do with Warp 10 and the concept of that? It's a stupid engineering problem. And it's just stuck in to give Neelix something.
Yeah, make Neelix feel more.
You've got that wonderful exchange with Harry Kim and Neelix when he says, in principle, if you ever to reach warp 10, you'll be traveling at infinite velocity. And Neelix says, got it, right. That means very fast.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up right there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it means really fast. That was it. That's actually a good line.
Yeah,
good line
he really there. Needed to just, forgive me, but go back into the kitchen and serve up some biscuits. Instead of having the chief engineer go back there, instead of working on this problem,
right,
I mean,
yes.
God, Neelix.
I think Neelix
he's such a... I want to say a naughty word, head, in this episode.
I think
he's
bored.
Just putting his way in on something he really doesn't know anything about, and yet he does still help solve the problem. But,
right.
I think Neelix is bored on the ship. He doesn't really want to be a chef, but it's like, it's the best thing that he can do on the ship. He wants to be helpful, and he's
That's
bored, I think.
Right. Well, he does try and butt his way in to all sorts of things about Voyager's operation, especially in the first season. Yeah. Like, if you go look through the episode guides that I've been doing, he's wanting to do all sorts of stuff. He wants to go on a main missions. He wants to do this. He wants to do that. He wants to learn security, blah, 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 blah. Neelix, butt out, dude.
Well, even
pick one
in,
thing and get really good at it.
In Blood Fever, doesn't he beam down and go spelunking with Tom and...
Belana, yeah.
I mean,
does.
Why?
Well,
why
he's
is he...
got expertise.
I've seen a cave before, right?
Yeah, surely it can't be that hard to navigate one. Yeah,
in the dark.
Right.
Exactly.
He just went there to get injured. I've been rock climbing before, so of course it can't be that hard.
Yeah.
No problem. I'll just take you down as I fall with me. Yeah. No big deal.
But so for Brandon Braga on here. I mean, I guess ultimately you have to blame him for this episode because he did write the screenplay and he did remove or allow elements to be removed that would have allowed the story to make more sense than it did. And he did try to squeeze too many things in here. I guess ultimately kind of my final thought on this here is that it was an episode with some great concepts that were poorly executed. I don't think that Braga necessarily wrote a stinker episode, but it evolved into one. It hyper-evolved, you might say, into one. As it was interesting to start, and it was still interesting, and then it started to go off the rails, and then it got weirder and weirder and weirder, so it kind of hyper-evolved into a mess in the end. So for me, it's not in the same class with something like Spock's Brain, although I kind of like Spock's Brain too, but I like it because it's just really cheesy and funny.
I think I just figured something out. This episode hyper-evolved and Spock's Brain hyper-evolved, and then they made it and they made These Are the Voyages.
Wow. Ah,
so that's what happened. Okay. Explains a lot. So it jumps a series, original
I just blew
series.
Charlene's mind.
Voyager, Enterprise. Yeah, so it took some time
exactly.
there.
Boy, Greg, man, dude, you're getting way too deep here, man.
Yeah,
I need a drink.
All right. Well, Colin, what are your final thoughts on Threshold?
I don't know what to say after what Craig just said. So.
Yeah, how do you top that? Woo!
I think it was a good idea, kind of right, is the easiest way to put it. They had this wonderful idea, let's make a ship that breaks warp 10. It's a bit like the Slipstream episode. They get slipstreamed, they make it work, and then they have to take it offline. Not thinking, well, we've made it work once, why can't we make it work again? It's one of them episodes. We have this technology. It can make a massive difference to us, but we'll only use it the once. And then we'll throw it out the airlock. And this is the problem. Voyager had so much promise because it was true to Gene Roddenberry's original vision. It's a ship, unknown space, exploring, first contact situations, left, right and centre. Brilliant. What stuffed it up was bad writing and a lack of continuity. And Threshold is a prime example of lack of continuity and the writers not thinking of the bigger picture. And if they'd have learned some lessons from Ronald Moore, who viewed DS9 as one big picture, if they'd have done that with Voyager, okay, this is the start, this is the finish, we need to fill in the middle and it's all got to make sense, this episode would have been so much more powerful.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think, you know, this episode's problem is endemic of a larger Voyager problem, that their bullpen doesn't run deep enough. They've got Brandon Braga, who has some good ideas, and they've got Rick Berman and Jerry Taylor there, but as a whole, their writing staff just doesn't have the Ira Stephen Baer, the Ronald Moore, the people who kept Next Gen together, you know, at least from season 3 to season 7, kept it together, kept it from going way too off the rails. Voyager just had episodes that at the concept level, even before the script started getting written, just they were not working. And by the time it got to Brandon, all he could do was just write the script and get it on screen. It was out of his hands. So you need a writing staff that's going to keep that from happening. It's like we talked about with Janeway and how I don't feel like she had the crew she needed for what was happening in the Delta Quadrant. I don't think that the writing staff here was up to 26 episodes a season. And Threshold is one of those many episodes a season that is like an air release valve, where it's them saying, let's just shove all the crap into one episode and we're going to care about next week's episode and we're just not going to care about this one.
Good point. And I really do think that that happened because they were so overworked. DS9 was running at the same time. Yeah. Voyager was running. And they'd been doing Star Trek for several years at that point. I mean, TNG had 7 years, and they were just, what now? What now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just grabbing onto anything. Warp 10, the Borg.
Right.
You know, DS9, Junkyard Klingons, anything that we might be able to use.
Right. Yeah. And so, a lot of good ideas came onto the table, I think. But, yeah, just the execution was not there. They couldn't go to the level of depth they needed to make it a really awesome idea and turn it into an incredible episode. Yeah. There was such a lack of depth there. And yeah, I love to hate Voyager for all the potential it had, for all that could have been.
Yeah.
Because there was so much there. And, you know, when you watch the show, you see it. But darn it.
Yeah, I agree. That's the thing for me, too, is that there are a lot of Voyager episodes, individual episodes, that I really like as individual episodes. But as a series, when I got to the end, after Endgame finished, and I look back at the whole series, I always felt like it was a lost series that like never really found its footing, and it never really had a true direction of where it was headed. And I think it's hard to keep coming up with original stories, even if you're doing one series, especially when you're the fourth series. Is that right? Yeah, the fourth series of a franchise. Mm-hmm. And when you also have another series, and Colin, like you said, they were doing the movies at the same time as well. You have all of that stuff going on at one time, and it's pretty much the same people who are kind of writing that.
Yeah.
It's tough. And another problem, what do you guys think about the fact that it was on UPN? You know, you hear so many stories about, like, the Next Generation cast. They're such good friends, and they had so much fun on the set together. And you always hear about how the Voyager cast, it was very tense.
Yeah.
And like a lot of them now, they really don't keep in touch with each other, from what I hear. And there were so many mandates, mm-hmm. I think, from the studio. And if you look at Deep Space Nine at the time, Deep Space Nine, it felt, I think, more relaxed. Like, they're just creating a world, creating stories, and they're enjoying their writing. And Voyager felt very, very tense. Do you think that that also contributed to some stories like this one in situations?
Yeah, I mean, Voyager had all this pressure from the network, because it was still at this point, this was what, January 96. It was still supposed to be the golden child. It was supposed to be the thing that held UPN together. And yeah, that's got to get through to the set and make you feel like there's all this pressure on you to make it happen and to crank out new TV every week. You don't get a break. Whereas, yeah, if it's something like DS9 or TNG, where you don't have all that pressure from the studio, there's much more chance to just be creative and to do what sci-fi needs to do. Whereas Voyager always feels like a TV show, mm-hmm. and it only occasionally feels like it's really trying to do science fiction.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, that wraps up Threshold. Interesting topic for us to talk about. We tend on the Ready Room, of course, to pick kind of some of our favorite episodes, I think, to talk about. And so it was interesting, except when we did These Are the Voyages. And
so, right.
Interesting to talk about Threshold here. So thanks for joining us today, Colin and Charlene. So before we go, Charlene, tell us where everyone can find you and, of course, what you do with the Delta Quadrant.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I'm on Trek FM, writing stuff for the Voyager series as the series editor, cranking out the episode guide, throwing out a feature here and there. I'll do a lot more of those this summer when I'm not drowned in grading, because right now that's consuming my life. And I'm also on the Delta Quadrant. It's a once-weekly podcast for Star Trek Voyager episodes. And we just recorded Partuition earlier today. So we're midway in the second season now.
All right.
On our way.
Very good. Wow. Yeah, I encourage everyone to go listen to the Delta Quadrant if you like Voyager. It's a great show, and they really go in and examine the episodes more in an episode review format, a little bit more focused than what we do here, I think, in terms of discussion.
We try.
So it's a very good one. Okay. And
yeah,
Colin.
No tangents at all.
No. And Colin, you have your own podcast, Trek News and Views, which I'm very happy to say is becoming part of the Trek FM family.
That's right. That's right.
Oh,
yeah,
cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it happened today.
Hey!
So,
congrats.
So welcome aboard.
I'm immensely pleased about. So,
yes.
Yeah, Trek News and Views, which is now available on Trek.fm, iTunes, and Stitcher. Basically, we have a random format. Charlene was on 2 weeks ago for an episode that's going to be released next Friday, where we review.
You guys have been doing a lot of episodes together, though, I must say. What's going on here?
We're going to have little salamander babies.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually thinking today when I seen the email and Charlene's name was on it, and I was thinking, this is going to start rumors.
Yes,
see,
rumors.
See, I was playing hard
starting.
To get for the longest time. And, well, you know.
Not anymore.
Now what?
Not anymore. Now it's gone completely the other way.
Okay, it's nice. A good thing my husband doesn't listen to podcasts.
I've thought about that before.
Yeah, I'm married. Right. I'm married. But that said, I love you as a friend, Colin. I really
Thanks
do.
Thanks very much. Your feelings implied are mutual, depending on how big your husband is. But yeah, if they want to find the podcast, just basically go to trek.fm, click on the podcast link, and it's there near the bottom.
Yep. Great. And you give a UK voice to Star Trek for us, and also covering news and talking about sometimes episodes, sometimes topics, you know, like captains or music.
Next week, so forth. At some point, or next week or the week after, we're going to have an interview with the people behind Star Trek London.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Nice.
Ah, very cool.
Right. Yeah, Greg and I were speculating on that on the last week's Ready Room. And just warning everyone to be careful. They say you have to sign up for Starfleet in order to get information. And just, you know, be aware of what that could mean.
Boy,
you could end
rough.
Up lost in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
Just like PDH.
Yeah. You might have to die 15 times.
All right,
good. Don't want salamander babies.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, and also on Twitter, Colin, where can people find you on Twitter?
COLMH01 is my personal one, and the podcast is Trek News Views.
Okay, excellent. And Charlene, you have one of the better Twitter handles.
I like to think so. You can find me at Oh the Profanity.
Which I have to say, you know, your timeline is quite clean for something that's named Oh the Profanity.
It used to not be that way, but I have a much bigger audience than I used to. Wider variety of audience, and want to keep it a little cleaner for the children.
Little,
little bit. Right. Just a little. Teeny. Like microbial.
Yeah.
Salamander size. Sorry, I can't stop with the salamander jokes now. Look at what you've done to me.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us today, Colin and Charlene. It was great having you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, somehow, Chris, we always manage to have Charlene on when we talk about episodes dealing with sex. Now, even though this was salamander on salamander action, I still am glad we were able to have her input on it.
Right, because no one else would refer to the ending as a hot mess. Right.
Exactly. And Colin, it's always good to have another voice on the show. Hopefully we can have Colin again on soon. I wish I had been partaking in the pint as he was. I had nothing to imbibe.
Me too. I could have gone for a pint there, but as it's morning here, I figured I probably shouldn't. I think the best way for us to have Colin on, though, is going to be to develop some sort of technology again where we can occupy all time zones at the same time. Because I don't know if our listeners realize, but you and I, Greg, currently, you're on daylight saving time, we are 16 hours apart. And during the winter, we are actually 17 hours apart. And so with Colin, he is in the UK, which puts him a little bit closer to me than to you, but almost kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then we had Charlene, who is there in central time zone. So if we could occupy every time zone at the same time, it would make recording a whole lot easier and,
yes,
and make life more comfortable for everyone as well. But I did enjoy talking about hyper-evolution, Tom Paris, and salamander babies. I hope that we were able to hit on both some of the, at least the positive potential of that episode, as well as some of the good old wackiness that's in there.
Yes, indeed. I always love talking about Voyager. Threshold is one I've been itching to do for a while. So I'm glad we finally hit the threshold.
All right. Well, let's tell everyone how they can find us if they want to share their thoughts on Threshold, salamander babies, or you know, unexpected romances between captains and their crew members. You can go to trek.fm/contact and use the form there to send us an email message. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Google+ at our own short link, hyperchannel/trekfmg+. And of course, you'll find us on Twitter at username trekfm, and that's where we do most of our talking about Star Trek. And we're pretty much between our two time zones around most of the time, if you want to hit us up there. Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well at your personal account.
That's right. I'm there at Greg Harbin, GREGHARBIN. And if I'm not talking about Game of Thrones or baseball, I'm probably talking about Star Trek, if I can sneak in a few references here or there.
All right. Sounds good. You can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And also, I want to remind everyone that besides iTunes, if you have the show through iTunes, you can also find us on Stitcher. So if you have the Stitcher app and you enjoy listening that way, just look us up there. I also want to invite you to visit the website for features and games. And also, if you want to test your Trek IQ, you can go to trek.fm/trektrivia or follow username trektrivia on Twitter, where you'll also get some quizzes, live quizzes, a few times each week. Also, Greg, one more thing I wanted to remind people of. If you do enjoy The Ready Room and you'd like to leave us a review or a rating on iTunes, it does help other listeners find the show. And we don't get a lot of ratings or reviews. Although we get a lot of interaction on Twitter, we know a lot of people are listening. We don't get many ratings or reviews. So if you do want to hop over and do that, we would love to hear your thoughts on the show. All right, Greg. Well, I'm going to go head out. I have sensed that my son is looking for me, so I need to disengage these new engines so I can pop out there in the kitchen and fix some lunch.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick some anti-protons in it, because the Ready Room is done.